Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football, try to give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week, especially this week from Oceanside, California, as the Utes and not the Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Okay, everybody, as you can hear, I am filming from a beach somewhere. This beach happens to be in Oceanside, California. I'm here with my wife's family, vacationing and just getting out of town. So I apologize for this episode again coming out late. I've had plenty of time to get it recorded, but I've been spending my time on the beach with my family. So we're recording this real quick on a cell phone and no recording equipment, just me and the beach, raw dogging it, if you will. So a little bit of film study from Cal Poly, the Utah-Cal Poly game over this last weekend. The Utes came away with a win 63-9, which was only 9 points off of my original prediction, as Cal Poly scored a couple more points on defense than I would have, excuse me, they scored a couple more points against our defense than I would have liked. But it was great to see that the defense never gave up a touchdown. Sophomore defensive end number 90, John Henry Daly, which, by the way, if you were in the golf community, that's such a great name, right? Anyway, John Daly began to set himself apart in the search for a new edge anchor on the defensive line. Alternatively, thanks to Jackson Benny, number 23, we extended our pick six streak to 22 years in a row. By the way, that pick six is a fun plug for this podcast, because if you watch the play, you can tell that Jackson Benny watches film. It's sort of a complicated coverage. If you go back and watch the play, Jackson breaks on an out route that is thrown to the inside receiver. A guy runs down on the field maybe 6 or 8 yards and then cuts laterally towards the sideline. It's one of those coverages where it's man coverage, but one where the nickel and the linebacker, and by the way, the nickel, for those of you that are new to football, the nickel is kind of like the safety that plays up closer to the line, almost like a cornerback, but just not on the boundary. The nickel and the linebacker are going to tie those two inside receivers on the trips, which means, yeah, we're both in man coverage, but if our receivers switch or cross before 5 yards, then we're just going to switch who we are covering. Usually you see the receivers switch first, and then the defenders react to it. But on this play, you see Jackson make his break on the ball right as the receiver makes his outcut. So you can tell that Jackson recognized the formation, probably recognized what route combination was coming his way, and right from the snap, he knows where he needs to be. He times it perfectly, and boom, pick six. That's where football gets exciting. It's a chess match, and not only in scheme and performance, but in preparation. So everybody needs a film room. The offense got off to a good start with a 52-yard swing pass to Wayshon Parker on their first series. They did a good job mixing up the backer coverage on a slant route coming to the middle, sort of an unofficial screen for the running back, right? You're not allowed to screen downfield to make room for a receiver to catch the ball, but if you just happen to run a route combination that gets the linebackers mixed up, then, you know, go right ahead. The rest of the first half, the offense did score 3 more touchdowns, but on one of those, it was thanks again to the defense, as linebacker number 7, Jonathan Hall, batted down and intercepted a pass from Cal Poly's QB2, Grigsby Jr., who I thought was much better, by the way, than the first string quarterback. They got the ball for the offense on the 1-yard line. So the offense really only drove the field to score 3 times in the first half, having to punt on 3 series against an FCS defense. They improved pretty well in the second half, though, scoring a touchdown on every possession and holding Cal Poly to 3 points. So from a QB perspective, I thought that Devin Dampier was surprisingly good again this week. Not surprising in the sense that I don't think he's capable of putting up good numbers. He obviously is. He's very, very talented. But just in the sense that he runs the ball so frequently and doesn't connect on that many, you know, 20-plus-yard throws, these numbers just kind of surprised me. Anyway, he was 17 for 23 for just under 200 yards and 3 touchdowns through the air. The biggest thing for me, though, over the last 2 games, sure, 6 touchdowns is great, but 0 interceptions is huge. Freshman Bird Ficklin put together another exciting performance this week as a QB2, going a perfect 4 for 4 and 53 yards through the air, as well as 5 carries for 55 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. So far, I think he's putting together a pretty strong resume to win the starting spot here in a year or two, depending on what Devin Dampier ends up doing, depending on how healthy we stay. depending on what Lisa's son wants to do, if he wants to enter the transfer portal again. from a rushing and receiving standpoint, it was a team effort again on Saturday, seeing rushes from 9 different players for 273 yards rushing, and receptions from 9 different players as well for 245 yards of receiving. That ends up being 533 yards of offense. Pretty stellar. New names or standouts include receivers number 9, Ryan Davis, number 18, Tobias Merriweather, and freshman tight end number 10, Hunter Andrews, who had 3 receptions and 5 carries, several of them from the quarterback position in a wildcat offense. So, like I said, overall, you know, exactly the game, for the most part, that we were hoping from the Utes. You were hoping for a high-powered offense that was able to put up a lot of points on the board, which we had. You're hoping for a good, solid performance from the defense. You're probably hoping for a shutout, but still, 3 field goals, not a bad outcome for the defense, especially considering they got down into the red zone or into, you know, Utah territory multiple times that game. So jumping back into scouting report for this coming week. Now, this week the Utes will face off against Wyoming up in Laramie, Wyoming. Talking about Wyoming as an opponent, you know, they were an old Mountain West foe that we used to see a lot of, and, you know, then as of late, we haven't really seen them all that much. So kind of a catch up. Last year, Wyoming went 3-9 or 2-5 in the Mountain West Conference, including losses to Power 4 teams like ASU and BYU, but also lost to teams like Idaho or North Texas. On the other hand, they also had a win against Washington State, a former P4 school. So it's safe to say that they're really inconsistent. this year, they're off to a much better start, though, having won their first 2 games against Akron and Northern Iowa. So maybe not a better start, maybe about the same kind of start. They play at home versus Utah this week, and then they play Colorado next week. So they'll likely start 2-2. The last time that Utah and Wyoming played, the Utes won 30-6 in Laramie. And currently, Utah owns a 4-win streak in this series. So this week's game, like I said, between the Pokes and the Utes will take place at 6 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time on CBS Sports Network, with action taking place at War Memorial Stadium, which, by the way, I think that's like the coolest stadium name, by the way. As it sits on Wednesday, the line is currently Utah by 22.5 points and an over-under of 48.5. So looking like something like 35-13 or 38-10, something like that. Some of you may be asking, why is a Power 4 team like Utah even playing an away game against a G5 Mountain West team like Wyoming? Well, it all stems from way back when Utah joined the Pac-12. Back then, they were still a Mountain West level talent. So they decided they were going to schedule their 3 non-conference games as follows. 1, a team they could beat 100% of the time, usually an FCS school. You've seen this kind of continue on nowadays, playing teams like Weber State, teams like Cal Poly, teams like Southern Utah. And then 2, a team that they could beat 75% of the time or so, another Mountain West team like Wyoming or maybe, you know, San Diego State we saw a couple years back. And then 3, a P4 team that should give them a challenge. So this game was originally scheduled to be one of those games that they could win 75% of the time, Mountain West level talent. It was originally scheduled to be played back in 2020, but was obviously postponed as the Utes only played 2 or 3 games that year. So they're making it up this year. Anyway, the more you know. Also, one last thing I have to mention about Wyoming, and my wife Sarah will make fun of me for this because all the time whenever I watch a game or I'm talking about sports, I always have to comment on like jerseys and your get-ups and all that. But Wyoming has, I guess, not stolen because the Utes actually abandoned this jersey design in favor of their current one. But Wyoming has now adopted the mountain sleeve on their jerseys like Utah used to have circa 2016. It's a beautiful design. I'm bummed that the Utes moved away from it, but I guess I'm glad someone else is using it. So look out for that this weekend. Diving in for Wyoming offense, head coach Jay Sovel Took the helm in Laramie for the 2024 season. This will be his second year as the head coach. He was previously the defensive coordinator and the safeties coach. I don't know a whole lot about this guy. Offensive coordinator Jay Johnson is the offensive coordinator and QB coach. He's been in college football for 29 years and has been offensive coordinator for 18, or at least been offensively, contributing from a coordinating perspective or offensive analyst perspective, something like that. His previous programs include schools like Michigan State, Colorado, Georgia, where he was an offensive analyst in 2017, the year that the Dogs made a run to the college football playoff championship game. Anyway, they have some good experience in their coaching staff. Diving into personnel, number 12, Caden Anderson is the quarterback. He is another tall fella, just like we saw last week. 6'4", 230-pound sophomore. He is, so far this year, 36 for 59. That makes him 61% pass completion percentage. 427 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. So, you know, so far, it's a respectable line. You know, he's getting some passing yards for sure. He's throwing a couple touchdowns. He's throwing 1 interception. You know, I think 3-1 is a ratio that most quarterbacks would probably be okay with, but obviously, most quarterbacks want to throw no interceptions if possible. We'll talk more about number 12, Caden Anderson, as we talk about the offense in general. But nothing really stuck out to me watching film. Like nothing made me think, oh boy, we need to prepare for this guy in a certain type of way. Anyway, I don't know. Let's dive into the running backs, because I think there's a little bit more to talk about when it comes to running backs. Mostly number 22, their starting running back, Sam Scott. He is another big running back coming our way. 6'2", 230-pound senior. He had 37 carries so far this year for 190 yards, which is a lot. So he's had 1 touchdown and averages 5.1 yards per carry. He looked pretty impressive versus Akron, I thought. He's aggressive. He runs hard. He's not particularly athletic in his cutting. It looks like he has a hard time slowing down enough to change direction. But again, like most running backs in college football, he can get downfield in a hurry. And he has some pretty decent weight behind him. Also saw some runs from number 5, Taron Kelman. He's 5'8", 210, a little bit smaller. He's a junior. He had 9 carries over the last 2 weeks for 92 yards. No touchdowns, but so far he's averaging over 10 yards per carry. So keep an eye out for numbers 22, Sam Scott, the big bruiser, and number 5, by no means a small running back. He's short, but he's not small. 210-pound running back. Both those guys are going to look to get something done on the ground. However, let's move more into where we think that Wyoming is going to spend a majority of their offensive efforts. First, number 84, their tight end, John Gillenborg. I don't know. Spelled like Gyllenhaal, but Gillenborg. Either way. 6'5", 250-pound senior. Has 8 receptions for 84 yards and 1 touchdown. He averages 10.5 yards per reception. He played a couple snaps as a freshman back in 2022, and then he won the starting spot in 23. So he's a 3-year starter, and he is someone that quarterback Caden Anderson will likely lean on a lot. He's projected to be an NFL talent. He's big. Like I said before, you know, he is a guy that the quarterback's going to depend on a lot. They offensively try to do something where they get the ball into John Michael Gillenborg's hands as fast as possible. Same as their wide receiver, number 13, Chris Durr Jr., who is quite small, 5'10", 173 pounds. He's a sophomore, but his game, you know, makes up for whatever he's lacking in size. He has 12 receptions for 244 yards receiving, 2 touchdowns, an average of 20.3 yards per catch. He does have 1 long catch of 49 yards, but this dude is a beast. Chris Durr Jr. is without a doubt the biggest threat on this team and likely the biggest offensive threat that the Utes have seen so far this season. His 244 yards of receiving is 3 times that of Utah's leading receiver, Ryan Davis, at 80 yards. He was utilized a lot versus University of Northern Iowa, but especially so against Akron. So just maybe keep an eye out for number 9, Jackson Holman. He's 6'3", 206 pounds. He's a sophomore. He has 4 catches at just under 10 yards per catch. The rest of the guys, I'm sure they're talented, so they just don't stand out yet, so we won't really devote that much time to them. From an offensive scheme, they run both under center and out of the gun. They also run some out of the pistol. So Ace is under center, single back, gun, shotgun formation. Obviously, most people know what that looks like. A pistol format is something you look at, basically a shotgun, where the running back, rather than lining up, split off to the side of the quarterback, lines up 3 or 4 yards behind the quarterback. So he ends up being like 8 to 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. First, let's talk about their run blocking schemes. Wyoming runs my kind of run offense. This is my kind of offense. They will use typical schemes like an inside zone or outside zone, read options, which are basically what we just call a base blocking run scheme. Just a general zone block where you block the guy in front of you sort of scheme, allowing the running back to find the gap with the most space, just allowing the running back to be an athlete. But Wyoming offensive coordinator Jay Johnson also uses a lot of gap running schemes, meaning that they use a lot of pulling guards and tackles to try to open up certain blocking angles and open up specific holes. They'll run inside, they'll run off guard, they'll run off tackle, they'll run to the boundary. It forces your defense to have to recognize a lot more plays, to be a lot more familiar with different places you'll go. Let's talk about specifically some of these running plays they'll run. Probably the one they use the most was something we call a middle trap, or usually just call it just a trap play, which is a play that involves lots of pulling and down blocking with your offensive lineman. It's a run that's usually slated to go up one of the A gap on the right side or the A gap on the left side. Technically, the 2 hole on the right or the 1 hole on the left. You're gonna have, one side of the offensive line is gonna block down, meaning they're gonna block towards the middle, which would then leave some guys open and unblocked on the outer portion of the line, which then, the guys on the opposite side of the line, because their guys are getting blocked from everyone, let's say to the right side, the guys on the left side of the line are going to then pull, probably the guard and the tackle are going to pull around, and they're going to open up a big hole and block outward towards the guys that are on the outer portion of the right side of the offensive line and open up a big hole in the middle. That running back is going to get lots of steam going downhill and try to, maybe break a tackle or two. That is a trap. They'll also run a lot of down plays, which is very similar to the trap play that we just talked about, except for it occurs more near the outer portion of the line of scrimmage, and it usually only involves pulling the backside guard. So very, very similar. You're going to have all – let's say we're running what we call a 26 down, okay? The tailback, the 2 back to the 6 hole, the whole line of scrimmage is going to block to the left. They're going to take from the right to left angle, going to close down the blocks, close down the angles, so the defensive players can't get to the outside. And then you're going to have the backside guard pull around and kick out whoever's that last remaining person on the line of scrimmage, whether it's a defensive end, whether it's a linebacker. Maybe sometimes you bring in some, an H-back or a tight end or a slot back, a slot receiver to also down block the linebackers that may be coming in. But basically you're trying to run this to the 6 hole or the C gap, basically on the right side of the line of scrimmage. So they'll run that a lot. They'll run a lot of outside sweeps. Same kind of idea. A lot of down blocking, blocking guys towards the middle of the field, trying to get an angle towards the outer portion of the field. That sweep can either be a handoff or a pitch. So lots of different stuff they're going to do from an offensive scheme, as offensive perspective, from run block schemes, from gap block schemes. Lots of fun stuff. I'm excited to see how Utah is able to respond to an offense that's a little bit more directed in its approach, as opposed to, and again, don't get me wrong, I have nothing wrong. I have no problems with zone blocking or zone reads or options and stuff like that. But it's fun to see an offense that says, you know, hey, we're going to tell you basically exactly where we're going, and we're going to rely on our ability to block you anyway. So kind of fun. As far as the run game is concerned, that pistol formation I talked to you about just a second ago, with the running back lined up behind the quarterback, who's lined up, you know, well behind the center. Basically, anytime they line up in pistol, it seems that they're likely going to run it. They run that trap that I talked about. They scored on it last week. They run kind of an off-tackle zone. If you see the pistol formation, they're probably going to be running it. Jumping into the pass plays or pass blocking schemes, these guys like to run a lot of single option routes, meaning they're predetermined routes that often involve trying to get the ball to a specific player using runoff routes or blocking from all the other wide receivers to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands as quickly as possible. This is what I was talking about earlier when we were talking about number 13, Chris Durr Jr., and number 84, John Michael Gillenborg. These guys are their best offensive options. They're going to try to use a lot of these, you know, screen passes, especially for number 13. They're going to use a lot of what we call spot passes for number 13, Chris Durr Jr., where basically they just turn and throw the ball right to Chris Durr Jr. at the line of scrimmage and let him try to use his athleticism to create space and get yardage after the catch. They use a lot of a drag under route, which means that, you know, we've talked about drags that go, you know, 3 or 4, maybe 5, 6 yards deep past the line of scrimmage. They'll use a lot of misdirection with these kinds of plays. You know, they'll do a play action handoff, fake handoff to the running back to one side, and then the tight end will kind of come from the other direction and run an underneath drag route, run that drag behind the line of scrimmage, and then arrow out to the flat with those other receivers on that side running, you know, fades or posts, or basically running long routes to try to clear out all the space possible in the flat so that that ball can immediately go to that tight end, because the defense usually is biting on that fake. So if Utah's defense can be disciplined in their pass coverage, then in their rules and their assignments, then, you know, I think that Wyoming will have a harder time getting these single option routes completed. Also, kind of just basic football, if Utah just decides to run zone coverage, then these play action passes will have no effect whatsoever, because no one's really flowing the football because everyone's covering a zone. So kind of some interesting ideas from them. Maybe they've seen it work with inferior, you know, athleticism from the FCS schools they've been playing. They'll run a lot of this. Another common route for them is, again, they'll use a lot of clear out routes from their wide receivers out wide, their X receiver, their wide receiver, their Z receivers. They'll run some posts, they'll run some, you know, some streaks or some slot fades or whatever. And then they do a route combination called tight end flats or halfback flats, where basically, you know, you've got the tight end on one side is going to run just a little tiny arrow route out to the flat, basically towards the sideline, maybe 2 or 3 yards deep. And then that running back in the backfield on the other side of the field, the left side of the field, is going to run that basically same route out to the left side. And what they're hoping on, or what they're hoping for, is again for the whole defense to clear out with all those deep routes and then clearing space in the flats, making an easy throw for the Wyoming quarterback. That's basically what we see a lot of with them is, like we said, spot passes, screens, clear out routes, trying to get a single read passing play to number 84 and number 13. Didn't have a lot of film to watch them in red zone or goal line situations. A lot of times, though, when they are in short yardage situations, like a fourth down conversion or third and short, maybe goal line situations, they'll go double tight end. So, you know, they're not afraid to do kind of old smash mouth football where they bring in all 11 guys all into the box and say, hey, you know, we're not really trying to be secretive here. You know exactly where we're going. We're going right up the middle with this. Let's go man on man, best versus best, see if you can beat us. I think that's a dangerous route to go against a team like Utah, especially considering it's a higher level of football. Especially this team, Utah, has a history of having really, really tough guys up front on the defensive end. So we'll see how it works out for them. Maybe being more cautious than I should be, I'm hoping that Utah can shut them out. But realistically speaking, let's say they hold them to 7, maybe 10. Jumping in on the defensive end of the Wyoming's team, defensive coordinator Aaron Bowl, defensive coordinator and linebacker coach for the Pokes for the last 5 seasons. He was just the linebacker's coach for the last 5 seasons. He was promoted to defensive coordinator last year, where Wyoming led the nation in third down defense last year, holding opponents to just under 26%. So he's young. We'll see what he brings to the table. Really, from a personnel standpoint, I didn't find a whole lot that I thought was very notable that I wanted to, you know, bring your guys' attention to. Number 9, Braden Johnson, is a linebacker. He's 6'3", 245 pounds. He's a senior. He's the leading tackler on the team with 14 tackles and 1 interception, although I believe he actually had a second interception last week. So he knows how to cover. He knows how to tackle. If we can effectively block number 9, I think we'll have a good time with the running backs. A couple guys on the defensive end. Number 8, Tyrese Boss. I believe he's the second leading tackler on the team, which is always a problem when one of your defensive backs is, you know, one of the tackling leaders on the team. He's 5'11", 195 pounds. He's a freshman, by the way. He had 10 tackles and 1 pass deflection. Defensively, you know, in previous matchups, Wyoming has run a lot of cover 1, or at least they did against Northern Iowa. I'd be surprised if they did it again against Utah, as typically speaking, man coverage doesn't work very well against a team with superior talent. We'll likely see them drop into more of a zone coverage, which could bode well for us since they have less practice at that over the last couple weeks. That also would be the much better way, you know, besides just covering receivers on the other side of the ball that are more talented and more quick and more athletic than you. It also would bode well for Wyoming in trying to bottle up a running quarterback like Devin Dampier. So, you know, defensively, we might not have the right kind of film to see what they're actually going to do against us. Typically speaking, they actually have had more variability in their defense than anyone we've seen this year from Utah or from BYU. They obviously do the classic nickel 4-2-5, a variation of the nickel where you do a 3-3-5, so 3 defensive linemen, 3 linebackers. They actually, though, ran a lot of 4-3, which is the first time we've seen that this year, which is, again, really common coverage, or really common defensive formation. It's 4 defensive linemen, as per usual, and 3 linebackers, this time giving more of an ace look from a linebacker perspective. So 1 middle linebacker and 2 outside linebackers, instead of a 4-2-5 having 2 middle linebackers. They like to disguise their coverages a lot by showing blitz, and then dropping quickly into that man or zone coverage, or by showing 6 or 7 blitzing and then dropping, you know, an odd man out into coverage. You know, for example, they had one against Northern Iowa where they showed 6 or 7 guys coming and then the linebacker blitzed, but actually the defensive end dropped into pass coverage. And this actually is one of my favorite things that defenses will do. When they stunt, and again, stunting, the term stunting in football is used to talk about players on the defensive end of the ball moving or changing their alignment in the moments right before the snap, to kind of confuse the quarterback, confuse the offensive line, confuse the offense in general so that they don't know what's coming. And I actually like this a lot when defenses do it. I think it's really smart. I'm surprised that the Utes don't do it more. I wish that they would. But, you know, if you're a quarterback and you see, you know, usually you're used to seeing, you know, 4 defensive linemen and 2, maybe 3 linebackers back there, and you don't really know where they're going either when they're in that standard formation, but at least you have a little bit of spacing, right? Versus when you have 6 or 7 guys all up on the line of scrimmage and you think, well, gosh, they could all be coming right at me. for blitz, and I maybe only have a second or a second and a half as opposed to 2.5 seconds, which is what they usually have to throw the ball. Or, you know, maybe they're going to drop off one of those guys, or maybe they're going to drop off all of those guys, you know, all the guys that wouldn't usually be coming on the blitz. It just, it creates a lot of possibilities for what the defense is going to do. It makes the quarterback have to respond quickly. If I was Wyoming, I would do this a lot against Devin Dampier, because he has a tendency to, not that he's quick to pull the ball down or that he can't make good decisions, but his tendency is to want to run first. So if I'm trying to limit, you know, Utah's effectiveness through the air and make them more one-dimensional, I would do a lot of stunting. I would do a lot of, you know, showing blitz, maybe bringing a blitz, maybe not bringing a blitz, changing it up. It would be a really effective way, I think, to try to beat Utah with your scheme, since you probably can't beat them athletically. Occasionally, for longer downs and distances, they would bring out what's called a dime coverage. So we talked about nickels, right? But dime coverage is usually a 4-1 or a 3-1, where you've got, you know, however many defensive linemen you feel like you need for the situation, but you've brought in, again, another sort of safety corner type player in a dime, kind of like a nickel. And you're really trying to prioritize pass coverage in this situation. You're trying to force that quarterback into throwing into lots of coverage, trying to make him make a bad decision, and really not needing as much pressure from a defensive line standpoint, either because you feel like you can get there with three, or you feel like, you know, this guy doesn't have that much time to throw anyway, so why devote, you know, an extra player towards a defensive pass rush? So, you know, I think defensive coordinator Aaron Bowl, I think he does some interesting stuff. He utilizes a lot of different options, which I think is smart as a defensive coordinator. I think one of the worst things you can do as a defensive coordinator is make yourself one-dimensional. Make yourself easy to read, easy to predict. Even if your athletes are supreme, which I think a lot of times Utah has very amazing supreme athletes, you know, we probably get a little bit too predictable. So it'd be really fun to see what Utah can do against this Wyoming defense. I still believe in Utah's firepower. I think Devin Dampier, he has yet to give us any reason to doubt him. You know, Wayshon Parker has been awesome. Nakari Rogers has been great. We've seen week after week so far, receiver after receiver after receiver come out to prove themselves. I think Utah is the real deal this year. I think they come out and put 35, maybe, you know, 38 points on them. I think we end up actually with exactly what the line says, something like 35-13 or 38-10. Anyway, that is basically all we have for you this week. This episode ended up being a little bit longer than I want to because I don't have quite the editing power that I usually have at home. Thanks for, you know, sitting in with me here on the coast. I'm sure you've heard the waves, the awesome ocean wind in the background. I'm sure you've also heard some of the folks driving by in their cars or their motorcycles. But we're hoping for a good game this coming Saturday. Hoping the Utes can come out with another W and up 3-0 coming out of non-conference play. Have a good weekend, y'all, and go Utes.